You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This week's broadcast is brought to you by title sponsor, Ducks Unlimited. Learn more about the world's leader in wetlands and waterfowl conservation at www.ducks.org. That's ducks.org. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. Excited to be with you for the next hour, the next 60 minutes. Hard to believe we are into the heart of June. It's felt like summer, although finally maybe some more reasonable temperatures, normal temperatures this weekend, just in time for the state track meet. Want to cover some outdoor topics here. I think we might talk about the corner crossing case that broke out in Wyoming here last week. We'll have Lesmeister a little bit with us, but we're going to kick it off with Tim Spielman, who is on the cusp of his annual Ontario fishing trip. Tim, how you doing?
Looking forward to a little time away and a lot of fishing.
Yeah, good. We'll talk about it more maybe when you get back, but that's a trip you've been doing for many years with a group of high school buddies pretty much, isn't it? Or were they college buddies?
Mostly high school. We had a couple of COVID years in between, so we were doing really well without getting the gang together, but then 2020 happened and 2021 happened, and last year I had puppies, so right. They all went without me last year.
That absorbed a lot of bandwidth for you a year ago, didn't it?
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Yep, they cost me some walleyes.
Well, we will look forward to you getting some good, well-deserved R&R and finding out how it went when you come back in a couple of weeks. This week, we'll kick around a few headlines. Middle of last week, we heard about Asian carp again, and we've talked a lot about how not a whole lot happened with it in the legislative session. There is some money, I guess, to pursue a barrier or begin the process of looking at a barrier. In the meantime, we had another high water year, and it sounded like we got silver carp jumping right below Lock and Dam 5, where we're talking about potentially installing this barrier.
Yeah, so I've heard. It'd be nice to see a timeline of how the discussions have gone. It seems like we're covering ground. I mean, how many years has this been in the discussion stage? You know, mm-hmm. But it seemed like by now, what needs to be said and discussed and has been, but yet we have millions of dollars to continue a study. And I get it. I mean, there's all kinds of studies you can do, but at some point, studies are great. It deserves that kind of attention, but we'll have to get to the action phase pretty soon if what people are seeing is indicative of what could be coming upstream. And there are people with higher degrees than me, that Peter Sorensen, for example, who say it's time for a barrier. Well, it's not going to happen because we didn't get the funding for it. But to me, it gets worrisome at some point when has the horse left the stable, sort right. of thing.
And it's starting to feel that way when they're jumping right below the dam. And we had some pictures. Folks might ask why we didn't print them. They were really, really grainy, folks. They kind of looked like distant Bigfoot. They could have been any species of fish based on how the pictures looked. I'm hoping maybe to get some better images. You know, DNR expressing some skepticism. Dennis Anderson wrote about that last Friday. Bob Meyer, the assistant DNR commissioner on the legislative issues, making some solid points, I thought, that, where is Wisconsin on this thing? This could affect them as much as us. It felt a little bit like, deflecting, you might say. Mm-hmm. That said, I mean, there's concern. Is the Kentucky version of this thing actually working? It's a lot of money for a giant bubbler, and if you don't get 100% of them, Are you just maybe delaying things a little bit? But to the point that I think Sorensen made in his story this week, Tim, and Brian Mosey's story, when these things get into Lake Pepin and hit critical mass, that's really, really frightening. You know, I'm a river guy. I've spent a lot of time on Pepin over the years. And it really does look like perfect habitat for these things. And it's an important recreational lake. It's a very important walleye lake. It's a wide spot in the Mississippi River. You and I both know Tackle Terry Tuna. That's where he does almost all his walleye fishing. What could this mean for, you know, destroying the walleye fishery there? And, you know, beyond fishing, I mean, the sailboating, there's so much recreation down there. Are people not going to want to go out there anymore if they're going to have, you know, jumping carp slamming into their head while they're pleasure boating?
And one thing to keep in mind also with this, agencies can make mistakes, misjudgments, that sort of thing. And if they make a bad call, it might take some time to rectify a situation. But it seems like with this, if you don't do the right thing, then, you know, it's like you think about common carp. There's no way that we're ever going to get rid of common carp. If these fish start reproducing upstream, it'll be an expense for one thing if we try to control them, but that's what will happen. And I don't see a mechanism where once they're established upstream to fix something that should have been maybe prevented.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisine and Tim Spielman kicking off this week's show, talking some headlines. Tim, I wanted to point out, you know, we do these quick chats in the paper, roughly one per month. And I did one with Marilyn Vetter. You did one with Kyle Rora from Ducks Unlimited recently. We're going to try to post all those on a special heading on the website. So folks kind of want to see those all in one place, all the quick chats we've done in the past year, maybe even going back a little further. I think some of them are still pertinent. We might be able to run some of those. The website's a good place to check those out. So you've done several, and I think they're reasonably well received by the readers. It's a good opportunity to get to know some of our sources.
Yeah. I was just going to say that some of these people we quote from time to time, some more frequently than others, but this is it's a good chance to get to better know the people and why they do what they do and what they do, you know, find out what they do. And it's fun to talk to them and get to know them a little bit better too, as someone who writes and reports.
And I think some of these folks, they're behind the scenes all the time. Maybe they appreciate having the limelight on them for for a few minutes anyway.
Yeah, and I should say too, one thing I've liked is that we have a variety. You know, we just mentioned two people, officials from conservation groups, but we've had writers from Outdoor Life. I think we had one of Outdoor Life writers once. We had a pro angler, so it's a nice variety of national figures. Many of them come from Minnesota, though.
Mm-hmm. They do.
We try to cover the upper Midwest, but we've got our fair share of very intriguing conservation types right in the backyard.
Yeah, we had a couple of the Rinellas. We had Rue Mapp once from, she's out in California. So, yeah, it's been a nice mix of folks. Tim, before we go, we had a press release come out from the DNR. Big old sturgeon poaching case. And the DNR naming names in the press release. You had to get to the bottom of the release to see all those names. But that's always kind of intriguing and kind of surprising. It comes out of the blue. It's like, why are people out poaching sturgeon? Any insight on that one?
Well, the timing is interesting. I'm not sure. It's June, right? June of 2023.
Yeah.
I think one paragraph in the story said, "I'll pleaded guilty last year to the charges, with the final case being resolved late last fall." That would have been 2022 if my math is correct.
Okay.
So I don't know what the timing is. Maybe it's because it was an interagency effort, which was pointed out time and again that Minnesota worked with the DNR. I'm not going to try and pronounce the names. They were from eastern Wisconsin, primarily Milwaukee area. One person, an oddball from Texas, who apparently were taking shovel-nose sturgeon for, I suppose, the purposes of caviar, right? Fish eggs.
You know, shovel-nose aren't that big of fish. Wouldn't think you'd get a whole lot of caviar out of one of them, but I guess you don't need too much, right? The stuff sells for mega dollars per ounce.
I haven't checked it, Four Winds Market, but...
There is a grocery store I go to where I see caviar occasionally, and I'll always kind of glance at it just to see how much it is. And I think it's like $50 for a little jar of the stuff. I've never bought it, but.
Is there something called that's like a fake caviar? Because I swear I've seen that somewhere.
I think
that's
you're
rolled
right.
into those roll-up things. I should try them.
Yeah. I think you're right. Well, okay. You sound like Tim. You were thinking about maybe following up on this and getting some more detail. It sounds like there's probably definitely more of the story. You said multi agencies, though, Tim. You said Minnesota DNR. Were they working with the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Feds, or Wisconsin DNR? Who else was involved?
The Wisconsin DNR is what I read. I don't see in the release that other agencies were involved, but the DNR, Minnesota DNR, seemed to go out of its way to point that out. Maybe we're getting along better with Wisconsin or something, and we can build a fish barrier together on the Mississippi.
There you go.
I don't know, but it is a story that probably deserves a little follow-up because as far as what the point of what these individuals were doing, and I'm sure it had something to do with the fish eggs, and how many fish are we talking about? Those are things that weren't included in the press release that I think readers would find interesting.
Do you know how they were catching them? Were they netting them? I mean, I fished the river a lot as a kid, and I think in all my years I've seen one small shovel-nosed sturgeon caught. They generally are incidental. I don't even know how you'd target them.
Right. I have no idea. And the fact that this began in 2019 would lead me to believe that there's maybe some interesting developments along the way. So I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, more to come. All right, good stuff. Well, Tim, we'll talk about that maybe in 2 weeks when you get back. But have a great fishing trip. Looking forward to seeing some pictures of big fish.
Me too. All right, thanks.
All right, Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. Let's break. We'll have more of the broadcast when we return.
Find Dad's Day deals that won't be beat this Father's Day at Fleet Farm. This week, take 25% off select Under Armour apparel and footwear for the family. Or get a Bighorn Greystone pellet grill for just $279.99. Plus, if you find a lower price, we'll match it. We have what you need for everyday life at new, lower prices. Fleet Farm.
It's walleye season, and at Sportsman's Lodge on the Lake of the Woods, we're ready to put you on fish. We have the boats, the gear, and the guides to give any angler a world-class fishing experience. Plus, our newly renovated dock system provides easy, convenient access. 49 new slips have power hookups to keep your boat charged and in the water, so you can get after the fish quickly. Book your adventure today at sportsmanslodges.com or give us a call at 800-862-8602.
Attention anglers, don't miss St. Croix Rod's annual Customer Appreciation Day on Saturday, June 17th in Park Falls, Wisconsin. St. Croix Rod's is celebrating its 75th anniversary of handcrafting the best rods on earth, and you're invited to the party. Attend seminars with top St. Croix pros, get special pricing on retired or B-stock rods, and participate in hourly giveaways. It all happens live on Saturday, June 17th. See details at stcroixrodsfactorystore.com.
Nice Chevy Trailblazer, Ben.
Thanks. It was love at first sight.
But didn't you say you loved all the room in the Traverse?
Oh, yeah.
And didn't you say you loved the style of the Blazer?
No doubt.
And all the tech in the Equinox?
Definitely.
But the Trailblazer was love at first sight?
Well, I didn't say it was the only one I loved at first sight.
The hardest part of driving home in a new Chevy SUV is choosing which one. Click now to learn more. Find new roads at your local Chevy dealer.
Introducing the all-new OutdoorNews.com, the most trusted source for all things out of doors in the Great Lakes region, just got better. At OutdoorNews.com, you'll now have full access to every outdoor news story, breaking news and updates, our comprehensive fishing and hunting reports, pro tips, and much more for our seven-state region and beyond. Top hunters and anglers look to Outdoor News to keep them up to date and ahead of the crowd. Now it's easier than ever with the all-new OutdoorNews.com.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota's sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerislein is with you for another segment. We'll have Tim Lesmeister with us for the back half of this week's broadcast. He'll join us in about 15 minutes. I want to jump in now with an interesting topic and a guest who I don't think has ever joined me on the broadcast before, Thomas Gable. He is from the Voyager's Wolf Project. And I tell you what, anybody connected to the outdoors, anybody with any interest in the outdoors who spends much time on social media probably is following the Voyager's Wolf Project, at least on Facebook, because these guys post some really cool video from northern Minnesota with wolves, all sorts of critters. Like I say, Thomas joins us now. Thomas, tell us a little bit about the Voyager's Wolf Project. Thanks for jumping in, by the way.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for having me. So the Voyager's Wolf Project is focused on understanding the ecology of wolves in and around Voyager's National Park in northern Minnesota, an area that we call the Greater Voyager's Ecosystem. One of our main focuses of our work is to really understand what wolves do during the summertime. And summer, we mean April until like October, basically when there's not ice on the lakes. And so we're trying to understand wolves' predation behavior during that time, and then also how wolves raise their pups at that time period as well. And so the work with wolves catching fish fits in perfectly with that because this happens kind of once the ice goes out. And so that's really the big focus because that's a time period when biologists really haven't studied or had struggled to study wolves because wolves are so challenging to follow and track in northern Minnesota without modern technology.
Well, we got some modern technology out there, don't we? You folks use a lot of trail cameras. There's a lot of hunters who use trail cameras, and is it the same kind of technology? The quality of video you guys get is incredible.
Yeah, so we're using commercially available trail cameras. We get asked a lot, you know, what cameras do we use? We use Browning Spec Ops model line cameras. They take superb footage. You know, the quality is amazing. And that's one of the best cameras, I would say, that we've found. I mean, we haven't tried them all, and there's a ton of them now. But that's one that we use. We like it. It's got a great trigger. So if anyone's listening and wants a good trail camera, I'd highly recommend that. And we've used a lot of other technology. I mean, GPS collars have been really critical. So the cameras, let's say for this fishing behavior, you know, the cameras have been helpful for documenting wolves actually catching the fish or chasing after them. But the way we really learned about it was through the GPS collars and watching where wolves are spending time. If we didn't have those GPS collars, I don't think we ever would have figured this out, or at least it would have taken us a very long time. So that GPS collar technology has really been crucial.
I've seen some maps you folks have created of the different wolf packs up there based presumably on the GPS collars, where those wolves are traveling. And it's remarkable how stringent the borders are between these different packs. They look like little mini nations.
Yeah, and sometimes that's oftentimes how it looks. Ironically, this year we've collared some wolves and it actually doesn't look like that at all.
Really?
We're going to probably share something on social media. What's happened is this year we had a lot of pack turnover. So packs that had been there in previous years kind of disappeared or things happened. We're not entirely sure. And so there's a lot of territory that's sort of up for grabs. And so we see wolves doing all sorts of crazy things right now. So this year looks a little different. But historically, you know, wolves are very territorial. They're in their territory and they don't stray from that very often.
Gotcha. The video footage you guys get, you get a lot of creatures besides timber wolves, gray wolves, don't you? I see a lot of great black bear footage, fishers, all sorts of interesting Northwoods creatures.
Yeah, we get really fascinating stuff. I mean, this, you know, past fall, we got a cougar. That was quite interesting. You know,
that's right. Yeah, we were
lynx. You know, we see lynx, moose, pretty much any animal that lives in the Northwoods. You know, we eventually get on camera. You know, ones that are rare, like lynx, you know, we don't get as often. But generally speaking, we've got over 200 cameras deployed in our area. So, you know, if there's an animal that's making the Northwoods home here, you know, sooner or later we figure it out, it seems.
That cougar moved on?
From what we know, we haven't seen another video of it. So who knows? I mean, I saw there was news of, you know, a cougar and someone got a really nice daytime trail cam shot of a cougar in Michigan recently. And, you know, you just can't help but wonder, we'll never know, right? You know, is that the same cougar that's just wandered through? Total conjecture, but those are the sort of things you start wondering.
Exactly. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerislein chatting with Thomas Gable from the Voyager's Wolf Project about some of the incredible video they're getting of wildlife, mostly gray wolves, up in northern Minnesota. Now I'd like to kind of get into the meat and potatoes of why we've got Thomas with us this week. You have released, what would you say, it's a white paper? It was a peer-reviewed paper, basically describing the fact that we got wolves up there eating a unique food source that maybe a lot of us wouldn't necessarily expect. I'll let you tell the tale.
So yeah, so we recently published a scientific paper. The lead author was Danny Friend, who's a graduate student at the University of Minnesota. And what the paper was really focused on was summarizing a bunch of different pieces of information we had about wolves catching fish. So we first learned of a couple of wolves hunting and catching fish back in the spring of 2017. And we thought that was pretty novel at that time, because that really hadn't been documented before in places like Minnesota. People knew in coastal areas of Alaska or British Columbia that wolves would catch fish there when salmon are spawning. But that's kind of categorically different than wolves hunting suckers in little creeks in Minnesota. So no one really knew about that. So in 2017, we thought, wow, that's really cool. And at that time, we thought there must just be a couple of smart wolves that figured this out, and it's probably just this really brief behavior unique to these individuals. But as time went on, we started to realize that this behavior wasn't just specific to a couple individuals, but that many wolves in many different packs went after fish in the springtime, when especially suckers is what they're really going after. So that got us interested in trying to then write sort of a comprehensive paper that described basically what we had observed from trail cameras, from GPS collar data. We had a wolf with a camera collar on it. So there's actually a GoPro mounted in the collar that captured a wolf hunting and catching fish. So really the paper was our attempt to summarize basically everything we have learned so far. And that includes when wolves are catching fish, how they're doing it, you know, what factors influence where they catch fish, all sorts of good details like that.
And the video is really cool. And I presume that's posted on your Facebook page,
yes,
correct?
Yeah, you can watch the video on our Facebook or other social media. It's on YouTube as well. And that really provides some really great behavioral information, because you can actually watch the wolves not only catching the fish, but you can watch how they do it. And that was really informative for understanding, particularly how they catch suckers at night. And we had people ask us on social media, how can they catch these fish at night when it's totally dark? And that was one of the interesting insights from the paper, was that when you watch that footage, you can actually see what the wolves are cueing in on is actually the sound of the fish breaking the surface. And then that's what they go after them for. So you see them just sitting, they just sit there in ambush, waiting and waiting and waiting. And then they hear a fish ripple and they go splashing into the creek.
Yeah.
So that was pretty interesting to see.
It's remarkable footage, and it's all suckers. Any other species? We've got a lot of deer hunters that are constantly mad about wolves eating deer. Are we going to anger the walleye anglers or the muskie anglers?
Yeah.
Are there any wolves eating sport fish, Thomas? Assure me that it's just rough fish.
Wolves love eating trophy walleye. That's what they call it. No, I'm just kidding. So it really seems to be suckers almost exclusively, because suckers are running up in these shallow little creeks and they're doing it in the springtime. We've not seen wolves really eating any other fish, primarily other than suckers. I mean, it's possible if there's something else in that creek
at
that time that they would maybe grab it. But, you know, these aren't the spots you're going to find walleyes and pike and different things like that.
And suckers are, you know, they're kind of an oily, fatty fish. I got to think that's a really good high-calorie food source for wolves during a time of year when there's not a lot of other food available, right?
Totally. Yeah. So when fish come available in this May period, starts being one of the beginning of sort of the lean time of the summer for wolves. And so suckers can be, you know, at least a couple pounds. Like you said, they can be oily. They're spawning, so they obviously have a lot of nutrients in them. And also, if you've ever seen suckers running, they can be quite abundant in certain areas. So if you're a wolf and you can figure out, oh, this is a good spot to wait, and you just have to sit there and the fish just kind of come up the creek and sort of like a conveyor belt, right? And you just pick them off as they come, that's a pretty good food source. And it has very little risk associated with it too. You know, hunting a deer, you could get kicked in the face or a beaver could bite you, but sucker's not going to do anything to you.
Sure. We know that wolves are generalists, right? They're omnivores that eat all sorts of different foods, right? They'll eat berries, I presume, part of the year. Mm-hmm. They like big game, and that needs to be their primary source. But they find a lot of different ways to supplement their diet and survive. That's why they're survivors, I guess.
100%. And I think that's the biggest takeaway of any of this work on predation, particularly when they start eating, let's say, what seems like unique food sources. You know, it's clear that wolves have adapted to just take advantage of food sources that are only available for short periods of time. And once they make that connection that, oh, there's food here, they're very good at continuing to go to that food source until it's not available.
Any response from the scientific community on this yet? Or you do have other people around the world saying, yeah, we're seeing some of this behavior too now? Has there been any scientific response yet, Thomas? I understand it's fairly early.
Sure. We've not heard anything yet. I think, you know, our biggest statement or conclusion probably out of the paper is that this behavior of wolves catching fish is likely widespread in similar ecosystems to our area up in Voyagers. And similar ecosystems would be sort of these southern boreal ecosystems that you'd find in Michigan, Wisconsin, Ontario, Quebec, you know, Manitoba, places like that. And, you know, I think it doesn't, most biologists, I don't think, are that surprised to learn that wolves would do something like this, because like we said, they're super adaptable. So they're very good at figuring this kind of stuff out. I think as more research is done to study the summer behavior of wolves in a variety of areas, that this probably will become more apparent. There's actually a study that came out from Labrador, I think it was this past winter, where they were looking at wolf scats, and they found that fish made up like 20% of the diets of wolves during the periods they were studying. So I think there is evidence. The problem is with, like, let's say scats, when you find scats full of fish scales, you don't know if wolves are killing them or just scavenging them.
Sure.
Whereas with our study, we're able to confirm with the video footage and things like that, that they're actually actively killing them. We've not heard anything critical. It'll be very interesting to see if people who do work similar to ours in the future find this kind of behavior. And my prediction would be that they would.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. Thanks for all you're doing up there, Thomas. If folks want more information on the Voyagers Wolf Project, where can they go?
They can go to our website, which is voyagerswolfproject.org, or look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Just type in Voyagers Wolf Project and you'll find us, and follow along and ask questions. And, you know, we try to share what we're doing with folks.
You folks have accelerated the knowledge that humans have on wolves absolutely light years just in the past decade, Thomas. It's really been transformational and a lot of fun to watch, too. I tell you, anybody out there who has any passing interest in wildlife, my daughter and I watch your videos all the time. We really enjoy viewing it. So thanks again for all you're doing, Thomas.
Sure. Absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah, you got a great team up there. That was Thomas Gable from the Voyagers Wolf Project. Just go to Facebook, Voyagers Wolf Project, and you can see the results of this study, as well as a lot of the other videos they're posting. Thomas, have a great week ahead.
Thanks. You too, Rob. Appreciate it.
With that, let's get in a break. This has been Outdoor News Radio. We've got Tim Lesmeister with us after these messages.
Attention anglers, don't miss St. Croix Rod's annual Customer Appreciation Day on Saturday, June 17th in Park Falls, Wisconsin. St. Croix Rods is celebrating its 75th anniversary of handcrafting the best rods on earth, and you're invited to the party. Attend seminars with top St. Croix pros, get special pricing on retired or B-stock rods, and participate in hourly giveaways. It all happens live on Saturday, June 17th. See details at stcroixrodsfactorystore.com.
Find Dad's Day deals that won't be beat this Father's Day at Fleet Farm. This week, take 25% off select Under Armour apparel and footwear for the family. Or get a Bighorn Greystone pellet grill for just $279.99. Plus, if you find a lower price, we'll match it. We have what you need for everyday life at new, lower prices. Fleet Farm.
The Kenai Peninsula is Alaska's playground. It's where you'll find some of the best fishing on the planet. Jason's Guide Service guides on the Kenai River, and this is where you should take your quest for that trophy rainbow trout. You can also get into some of the best sockeye salmon fishing in the world. If you want to take home some fresh wild salmon, there's no better place to do it than on the Kenai River. Check it out at jasonsguideservice.com.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again, then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. Your work keeps our water clean, improves the soil, and enhances wildlife habitat. It also provides countless benefits, not just for you and your family, but for millions of Americans who depend on this region every day without even realizing it. Thank you for being stewards of America's prairie for all of us. Take a moment to find out how conservation pays. Visit conservationpays.org.
Welcome back, folks. Back half of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. Our friend Tim Lesmeister is going to help me bring it home here. If you like what we talk about, check us out online at outdoornews.com or subscribe to the print version. Call 800-535-5191, or you could subscribe to digital or print at outdoornews.com. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. You've got some travels coming up, huh?
Yes, I do. Up to Alaska. This is my annual trip to Alaska. I'm one of the fortunate ones that has a son who lives in Alaska, so I go up there. I have a place to stay. It's even more fortunate for me because he lives right on the Kenai River in Cooper Landing. And what is really icing on the cake is that he's a fishing guide.
Yeah.
And he has boats and tackle and knows where to go. So I get to go up there and spend a few weeks with my son, with my daughter-in-law, and my granddaughter, my little four-year-old granddaughter. And we're going to have some fun.
Wanted to talk to you about something you and I have already discussed. In fact, I can't help but wonder if some of the publicity I'm seeing on this topic is the result of our discussions, Tim, on this show and on some other broadcasts. And it involves, you know, fishing technology again, and specifically forward-facing sonar. It's something you and I have debated a little bit, respectfully, is forward-facing sonar, which, by the way, isn't you like to make the point that you've been manipulating old transducers to do the same thing for decades. But even the modern, like the Garmin Panoptix, is at least 6 years old, I think. So, I mean, it's not like it came out 6 months ago. But it's getting some publicity. Glenn Schmidt was on with me a couple weeks ago on this broadcast, Tim. He does the Outdoor News Fishing Report, talking about how on Leech Lake, he says he hardly sees anybody, quote-unquote, fishing anymore. All he sees is boats kind of meandering around while everybody's looking at their screens, whether it's the Lowrance system, the Hummingbird, the Garmin system, using this real-time sonar to locate fish and then cast to them directly. The term that keeps getting thrown out is game changer. Dennis Anderson wrote about it last Friday in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I see the Outdoor News website has got a piece by Ted Dobbs saying the headline is "Technology Spoiling Fishing Instincts." I'm going to write a more complete story on this topic next week and even ask some questions of the fishing industry about ethics and about fair chase. I sent you the Dennis Anderson story and asked you to read that to get your impressions. After reading that, any deeper thoughts on the topic?
Yeah, I think that forward-facing sonar, the Panoptix, there's the side imaging. Side imaging has been around since early 2000s. These all basically give you a much wider spread on your sonar. You know, you've got a cone angle on your regular sonar, looks straight down below the boat. With forward-facing sonar, you can actually, it could be called side-facing, front-facing, rear-facing. You're basically turning a transducer pad to shoot out in a certain direction and see if there's fish in that direction. We were using it on the Chippewa flowage a couple of weeks ago. We were finding big schools of crappies using it. It's a really good way to find schools of suspended fish. And, I mean, we could have done the same thing just by motoring around and looking at the sonar. So what you're doing is you're shortening your time on the water searching for fish. You are able to find them quicker. In the case where the muskie anglers are really screaming very loud, those big muskies and huge northern pike like to suspend. So you can actually just motor around with your, I call it optics now, because that's what it is. It's sonar optics. And you can actually find these suspended fish much faster. than by casting just blindly to get a fish to follow, or using your sonar that's facing straight downward to locate those fish. And so to me, it's just adding a little bit more to the program to shorten your time searching.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Driesline with Tim Lesmeister talking about a little bit of technology controversy that's come up and some of the discussion about the impacts that it might have on fishing. I was talking to Steve Panaz a little bit about this topic, Tim, and he made the point that he's learned so much about fish and different species of fish that he didn't know before. And this is a guy who's been, you know, a fishing communicator for, you know, decades. Tony Roach, I think, made the same point that he's learned about how fish respond, maybe to noise above the ice or noise from a boat, because you're able to get this real-time response from the fish. So, you know, Steve making the point, it's been a valuable tool to him that way to learn about fish and to interact more with fish. I had the same feeling the first time I learned to use a Vexilar properly when I was ice fishing. This is much more interactive. This is a much more immersive, enjoyable experience for me because I'm not just sitting here looking out on this bleak white landscape. I'm interacting with these fish a lot more. I'm also becoming a more efficient angler. And Tim, the first time I used a Vexilar and I learned how to use it and I learned what I was doing, I chuckled under my breath and I was like, this should be illegal. I mean, I feel that much more powerful as an angler. And that's just, to your point, a cone directly into the ice. This takes it to a whole new level where, in real time, we're finding fish on a, what would you say, Tim, like on a horizontal basis?
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, we would drill a lot of holes on the ice, and then we would stick that transducer down the hole, and we would see directly below the hole, and we would see if there were fish below us. Now what you can do is drill just one hole.
Right. Right.
And you can drop that transducer in that hole, and you can look all around 360 degrees.
Yeah.
Out, you know, 50, 60 feet or more, and you can say, oh my gosh, look at that direction there. It's 40 feet away. There's a school of fish. So you walk over 40 feet and you drill some holes. Now, as Tony pointed out, Tony Roach, those fish while you're drilling holes might move, but they'll come back. The reason they were there was because there was probably some forage, and they'll come back, but at least you'll know that it's a good starting point. You don't have to drill 50 holes. Now you drill one. And that's why I say it shortens your time searching, and that's what it's about. But now you got to remember that you're only looking for suspended fish with this. You know, I just did an interview with Jeff Gustafson, who won the Bassmasters Classic, who was using the forward-facing sonar as well as the underwater camera to find these smallmouth bass that won him that championship. And he wasn't seeing much on that forward-facing sonar as far as fish. He was looking for rock. And once he found the rock, then he would put the camera down to see if there were fish in that rock. So for him, it was about finding structure. And that's another thing that you can do with this sonar as well, as look out to the far edges around your boat, which is a lot you can see with your sight imaging as well. So, it's a totally different game now that we're entering into here with all this transducer shooting in all these different directions.
Tim, let's quickly talk about what this means for pressure on our fisheries, and that's where the concern is. Think about the scenario you just described for ice fishing, where you and another guy maybe used to drill 30, 40 holes to find the fish. Now you're going to drill one or two. Extrapolate that forward with 10 or 20 fishing parties out on a given body of water, and how much more efficient those 10 or 20 fishing parties are going to be when they're fishing. They're going to be on the fish faster. They're probably going to spook the fish less, but with all that less drilling, they're going to be more efficient anglers. Doesn't that put exceptionally more pressure on our fisheries? And what does that mean for our fisheries long term? Does that mean more harvest? Does it mean lower limits? Does it mean less access long-term when everybody owns one of these units?
Yeah, it's going to be a long time before everyone owns one of these units. They're very expensive. But eventually the price will come down and people will have them, just like sonars did, just like sight imaging, just like underwater cameras. And what is going to happen is yes, we're going to become more efficient out on the waters. It's going to put more pressure on the resource, obviously. But I don't know that it's going to mean that you're going to have to modify certain aspects of the fishery. Muskie angling. The muskie fishermen are all screaming about these muskie anglers who are catching more fish, but they're releasing them all. I haven't heard of anyone ever keeping a muskie in the last 20 years.
Yeah, but if you're pulling a muskie up from 30, 40 feet of water in the heart of summer, is that fish less likely to survive? I'm seeing pictures of guys, Tim, who traditionally have not been muskie anglers, who are going, we're going muskie fishing. They're coming home with four or five pictures of muskies. These are guys that in the past, you know, maybe would have gotten a couple fowls, maybe one fish. Now all of a sudden, they're right on these fish immediately, and they look like expert muskie anglers because of the power of this technology.
Yes, and they're catching these fish and releasing them right away. I think the fish are, if there's some delayed mortality, you know, it can happen, but it's a renewable resource. We'll have to pay attention to see if the creel surveys show that the muskie anglers are getting less results, less mm-hmm. positive results because
yeah,
of
we
this.
Need some data. Yeah,
and we need some data. Panfish, I think that ice fishing for panfish has gotten to the point now where, you know, you drill a lot of holes, you throw down a deucer, you find the fish, and you catch them. And I think that ice fishing pressure has been accumulating over the years. Boy, I'll tell you what, I'm not sure that you can add much more pressure from an ice angling standpoint than what's out there right now. It's a lot. But I do think that for suspended fish, for walleyes and for smallmouth bass, for
deep muskies,
pike, I think you're going to see some changes for largemouth bass, sunfish. I don't think that those right. that's going to affect those at all. These are fish that tend to hang in cover, and you won't be able to see them.
I'm hearing that from some of the bass guys, that it's almost more trouble than it's worth on right. really productive bass waters. My only final point, Tim, I would make is that Dennis brought this up in his story, and I thought it was a solid point. You guys got guys running around in boats that are $75,000, $80,000. I don't think $2,000, $3,000, which is what these units are going to cost probably in the next 18 months, is that big of a bite. Folks are investing that kind of money into their boats, not to mention their huge pickups that they're towing around. This is a small extra expense.
Yeah, if you're going to make it illegal, you better do it now, because in another 2 years, there's going to be too many of them out there for you to do that.
No, I think the cat's out of the bag.
That's what happened. Bob Lessard said that. You know, he said, I wanted to ban every piece of technology that's ever come along. It's just that by the time a legislative body gets around to it, it's too late.
Right. All right. Well, let's get a break. We'll have a short segment when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio. Minnesota's largest outdoor event returns for its 42nd year, Game Fair. Check out dozens of hunting, fishing, and dog training seminars. Visitors can see more than 300 exhibitors, plus enjoy games for dogs and youth. Test the latest equipment and enjoy the world-famous Duck and Goose Calling Contest. Game Fair runs 2 weekends, rain or shine, August 11th, 12th, and 13th, and August 18th, 19th, and 20th at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. See details at gamefair.com.
Find Dad's Day deals that won't be beat this Father's Day at Fleet Farm. This week, take 25% off select Under Armour apparel and footwear for the family. Or get a Bighorn Greystone pellet grill for just $279.99. Plus, if you find a lower price, we'll match it. We have what you need for everyday life at new, lower prices. Fleet Farm.
It's walleye season, and at Sportsman's Lodge on the Lake of the Woods, we're ready to put you on fish. We have the boats, the gear, and the guides to give any angler a world-class fishing experience. Plus, our newly renovated dock system provides easy, convenient access. 49 new slips have power hookups to keep your boat charged and in the water, so you can get after the fish quickly. Book your adventure today at sportsmanslodges.com or give us a call at 800-862-8602.
Spring and summer are prime time for ticks that can spread Lyme disease and other infections. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention would like to remind you to wear bug repellent when outdoors, shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check your whole body for ticks every day. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
Introducing the all-new OutdoorNews.com, the most trusted source for all things out of doors in the Great Lakes region, just got better. At OutdoorNews.com, you'll now have full access to every outdoor news story, breaking news and updates, our comprehensive fishing and hunting reports, pro tips, and much more for our 7-state region and beyond. Top hunters and anglers look to Outdoor News to keep them up to date and ahead of the crowd. Now it's easier than ever with the all-new OutdoorNews.com.
I'm Chris Jakimic. I served in the United States Air Force, and I deployed 3 times. Being a veteran, it's interwoven into your DNA, is really the absence of the connection and the purpose that can really drive a lot of veterans to some negative thoughts. For those who are in a suicidal crisis, the window of time to save somebody's life is very short. Our duty is to protect ourselves and protect our families. And one way you can do that is store your weapons safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisline is with you, as well as Mr. Tim Lesmeister. We had a good segment. We chatted about forward-facing sonar. I encourage you to check that out. I'm going to have a news story about it next week. I'll probably quote some of what Tim just said in that piece, so you can read that also. Check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe. Tim, my parents just got back from a trip to Yellowstone National Park. Dad is now 80, right? And my mom is a few years younger. They love going out there. They really have it dialed in. They know what they like to do. They know what they like to see. I hope it's not their last trip to Yellowstone. I know it's getting harder for them to make that trip at their age.
Did they visit the petting zoo out there?
Well, and that's where I'm going with this. My dad is a photographer, and he loves to take wildlife photos. And I was out there a few years ago with him, and he was photographing an elk. And, you know, Dad was a wildlife biologist. I mean, this right. is not your average rule. But there was a time or two, it was like, Dad, come on, back off. We're getting a little close. My old man's got nothing on some of these people out there now, huh?
Oh, my gosh. It seems like every week we hear two or three right. stories about people that have tried to ride a buffalo or pet a bear. It seems like it's just one right after another. You walk up to a bull elk to pet it on the rear end. It's just crazy. And then all of a sudden they wonder, why did this bear chew me to pieces? And why did this buffalo all of a sudden stomp all over me or gore me or whatever? It's, come on, people. Are you kidding me? These are wild animals. This is not a petting zoo. It's not the Yellowstone petting zoo. It's the Yellowstone National Parks where the animals are wild.
Well, what's so amazing about Yellowstone National Park is it's a big place, and it gives Americans a bit of a piece, a bit of a slice of probably what North America looked like pre-settlement. And, I mean, there's not many places you can go in the lower 48 where you can watch, a wolf pack messing around with a buffalo. Usually the buffalo run them off or, chasing a herd of elk. It's an amazing place, and I'm glad we have it. But, I'm 53 years old, Tim. I mean, I've been hearing these stories since I was a kid. Why is it not sinking in with the general public that, no, you can't pet the bears? Bison are the largest wild animal in North America. They will kick the snot out of you. No, you can't put the elk calf in your pickup to give it a ride back to mom. That's like a real headline that just happened.
Yeah, I know. I saw it.
How are we failing as a society that people go to these parks and think they can play with the animals?
Or they'll see a small animal, a baby was just born to a deer, a fawn laying in the grass, and for some reason they think it's the mother has left it and that it needs to be taken to some safe place. And so they'll literally pick it up, throw it in the back seat of their car and drive it to a place where they're supposed to be taking care of orphan animals. It just doesn't work that way. And you just don't want to touch these animals. And then, of course, it's, again, I think a lot of people have watched too many cartoons. When they see a coyote, they're looking for a roadrunner, waiting for the anvil to fall. Right. And they see these animals in the movies, and they're all friendly, and they're all happy, and they're all, one with you and all the other creatures on the earth. No, that's not how it works. They don't like you in their space. As far as they're concerned, you're trespassing, and you're going to get penalized for it, and they're going to make sure. When I'm up in Alaska, I'll be pulling my kayak down a trail, and I'll see a moose. I'm not happy to see that moose. I'm not like, oh, boy, I think I'll walk up there and give that moose a little pet on that big old snout. No, those animals are very dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't get close to moose. Even the ones in the water. I have seen people in Alaska literally try and get as close as they can to this moose to get photos. And I can see the moose getting very, very nervous.
Sure,
and
see,
I'm
laying
thinking
its
to
ears
myself,
back. And,
you're lucky there are no calves nearby, or you guys have already been stomped to death.
Right. My sons and I have stumbled into a couple moose hiking in Glacier National Park a couple times, and we cleared out fast. One time, we were coming around a corner, and this bull moose stood up just yards away from us. And, man, oh, man, you do not realize how huge they are until they're
They're that close. They're incredible animals.
My favorite one was I was up in the Boundary Waters, and we were actually going in to shoot some pictures, so we went into Lake One because there's you don't have to portage to get into it. You just right off the road there. And we did a quick short portage into Lake Two, and we're setting up our stuff. And we see these people are paddling up to this moose that's literally in the water about chest deep, and it's eating some of the vegetation out of the lake. And they're paddling up to it to get some photos. And they got a little too close. This moose did not like it, and it started going out after them. It started swimming towards their canoe, and they started backing up. And this moose is coming at them, and they're getting real freaked out, and they're trying to paddle as fast as they can. These moose actually move pretty quick in the water. This thing almost caught up to them. And I think if it had, it would have swamped them.
Probably.
And they realized that, you know, this moose did not like these individuals to be encroaching on it while it was sitting there having a little bit of lunch. So that was just too close for comfort.
My experience with moose in the Boundary Waters is that they usually go the other way very quickly.
Yeah.
Different than in national parks where I presume they just see so many people that they're not as scared of people, and so they're a little more tolerant, which can be bad because then people think, oh, I'll get really close and take a picture, and then the animal turns on and kicks the snot out of them. But yeah, like I said, my experience in the Boundary Waters is that moose are pretty darn skittish. They bolt pretty fast.
Yeah, I've had them get up close and personal with me up there a couple of times too, so they do that. They'll be curious. And a lot of times you'll startle them and they'll run, but they'll turn around to look back.
We've got a lot of people, Tim, I think, that have been since the pandemic, been exposed to the outdoors. And I mean, the pressure on our national parks, especially the big ones, Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, Glacier, Yosemite, the volume of people just overwhelming these parks is, like I say, it's overwhelming. I'd use the same word twice. And again, that's good. I'm glad people want to experience these places, but we got to protect them too. You know, the Park Service is implementing some of those policies. The Going to the Sun Road in Glacier National Park, you actually have to get a permit now to drive over that road. You got to get it months in advance. It's a fine line between enjoying these properties and loving them to death.
Oh, it is amazing to me. There are people that come up to Alaska, and you'll run into them at the bars that come up there and think they can just pitch a tent out in the wilderness somewhere and live off of beef jerky and what little water they have in their bottle, because they'll, you know, just drink some out of the streams. And what they don't realize is that there's a lot of mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's you can get lost really easy. And when you do, you know, I mean, it's a long way out.
Yeah.
And, of course, then the animals, as soon as those bears can smell. The bears have incredible, incredible noses.
Yeah.
They can smell that beef jerky a mile away, and they'll come in looking for it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you've got to deal with a big old brown bear that wants to pick up your food pack and run off with it. So, you know, people are so naive when it comes to the outdoors because they don't do the research. They just buy a tent, a backpack, a few things that make sense to them, and just go to try and experience it. Do your homework. It's a good idea to make sure you know what you're going to have to deal with. It might end up killing you.
Final quick anecdote. A lot of tourists at our big national parks are international, who that's part of the issue, right? They don't grow up in our culture and maybe get exposed to some of these things. But my parents had they had some people in the parking lot asking them about the pepper spray, and they did not speak English well. They thought the pepper spray was to put on your body to repel the bears. Instead of insect repellent, they thought it was like bear repellent. And my parents were like, no, don't spray yourself with the pepper spray. That would be bad.
Oh, man, that is funny. Yeah, just your boots and your legs. Just don't get it above your waist. You're fine.
Right. Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah. Well, Tim, thanks for spending a couple seconds with me. Safe travels.
I'll be talking to you next week from Alaska.
Sounds good. Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him and all of my other guests. Everybody, have a great week out of doors. Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.